And welcome on in. It's Jonathan Peterlin, Spencer German with you guys over the next 5 hours. Jim Bowden coming your way at 5:20. Daryl Ryder at 6. We have Mac Robinson on the board.
Yes. I try to time it up every time. I always fail.
That you go for it, though. I thought about that coming in.
I just try to do the yes. That's it. And I always think I'm going to time it up right. I tried to do it at the end of the show last time. I don't think I timed it up right. This just means we need to work together more so we can time it up a little bit better.
I agree. I thought that was a good effort. I like that you go for it. We have Anthony Alant producing today's show. Spencer, how are we doing today?
Can't complain. I definitely didn't expect to be sitting here and not have Cavs basketball this week. But, you know, I mean, I know I was here last week when we didn't have Cavs basketball anymore, but yeah. I think it was still like very new and fresh, and all of a sudden it's like now I have a lot more free time.
When you signed up for this one, I'm sure you thought, oh yeah, okay, Nick's going to be out. He's got a family event tonight.
We'll have lots of Cavs.
And we do have Cavs to talk about, by the way. It's that we still have some of the. The house didn't burn down completely, but we have some of the rubble to go through and figure it all out. It's definitely a different environment, different atmosphere than what you thought you signed up for.
Yeah, I mean, like when this playoff run started, I had a hotel booked for game six. I had a flight booked for going to Boston for the conference finals.
Did you get on your itinerary early because you heard Brian Windhorst talking about how he has everything booked out months in advance? I feel like, if anything, Windhorst just encouraged every beat reporter or reporter out there to book their travel early.
He did. I more so did it just out of like, well, if I book it and I make sure I get it at a better price. Like my whole thought process was just selfishly like, I want to save as much money as possible.
Naturally.
So I'm going to book it early and then I'll just be able to cancel it later. And I unfortunately ended up having to cancel all of it. I thought for a while, I was like, well, I'm going to have to cancel the Boston thing because it looks like New York's going to win that series. And I was like, I thought one of those teams was coming back. I didn't know who. And then neither of them came back.
Did you get full refunds on all of it or what?
I did, yeah. Yeah.
That would scare me. Like, I wouldn't even, like a lot of the airline stuff, you just get like their own points. And yeah. Or like airline, like Southwest bucks or whatever it is. And it just scares me.
The hotel in Indy was just like, do it. I don't know. It was like by 6 p.m. the day before. And yeah. As soon as I literally left the arena, or not the, didn't leave the arena. I left like the media section, went down to the press conferences. And the first thing I did was pull up the email and just say cancel. That was it. I was like, oh, well, I can't get rid of this thing before. Because I just know me. I was like, if I wait overnight and I'm like, yeah, I'll do it tomorrow. I knew I'd forget. And I don't want to get charged for a hotel that I'm not even going to use. So I was like, never mind.
I would do awful in your job because I know that you pay out of pocket for your travel expenses. And so I would constantly be like, I don't know. Is game two really worth it? Like game five, sure, maybe. But game two, is that really? There's not much of a difference there.
I did play that game because I think I talked to you about this pre-show.
New golf set, travel to game two. I know what's winning out there.
We have a birthday party coming up this weekend for my son. Mm-hmm. And that was going to interfere with the first couple games on the road of the conference finals if they got that far. Mm. And so I ultimately was like, I think I'm going to book a flight for game four and then game six. So, cause I would have missed game three entirely if it was in Boston. I was like, so I was like tossing around with that. And then I know I always get reimbursed, but you're right. Like the expense still comes out of your pocket for like a couple months and you got to like wait. So I was like, I waffle a lot too.
Just so you know, so Jackson's turning three. Happy birthday to Jackson, your son. I become a professional birthday party attender for little kids. not for like adults or anything. Still haven't figured that one out completely, although I'm pretty good at that. You just stand in the corner and drink and hang out with people. But with kids, I've got it down. I used to dread going to these birthday parties. I'd even talk about it on the air, like just how ridiculous it is. Every single weekend's a birthday party. And then all of a sudden, once the kid hits around 2 years old, the parents figure it out. See, the first year people, the parents want to celebrate it and they make it a big, what do you do? And they haven't been to enough parties, so they don't know how it goes. But by two, everyone knows you get pizza, you get sheet cake, and everything is 2 hours max,
cooler,
and that's it.
A cooler of alcohol and you're set.
And you're just hanging out.
Kids' birthday parties are
kids
one
run
of
around.
The, like, listen, there's, I shouldn't say one of, because there are a lot of perks to being a parent. It's a blessing, it's great, but you know how it is with a toddler. Like, there's highs, there's lows, there's bad days, there's bad nights, there's good days, there's good nights. One of the best things I can say about being a parent is like the birthday party day. Yes, there is a lot that goes into it. My wife stresses over like making sure everything looks perfect and she gets all these great decorations and all this stuff. But once you're in the element of the party and you just have a bunch of people over at your house and they're just kicking their feet up, you got a big cooler full of beer, you're just hanging out, like it kind of takes care of itself in that way.
No,
you just,
we did
you
so
set the
much.
Food out, you get the drinks and you're good.
We did so much unnecessary stuff for Charlotte's first birthday party. I'm telling you, people that went to that party, we thought we were throwing a great party. We did the exact opposite of anything that anybody wants at that point or even expects. It's 2 hours max. You have some alcohol in the corner, but really you got pizza, you got cake.
Yeah.
You sing happy birthday, kids run around, boom, you can do it. It's great.
It's a beautiful thing.
All right, let's get into this today. Dwayne Wade was on his podcast, the Time Out podcast with Dwayne Wade, and he was speaking about a topic that I feel like has just kind of been swept under the rug a little bit. Now, we talked on last Wednesday, me and you, and I felt like, because that was after Game 5, I was one of the very few people in the city that I felt actually was critical of Donovan Mitchell. And it wasn't necessarily that Donovan didn't put the team on his back. He did. He did a lot in that series, but his usage rate went up to a million. He had a higher usage rate in Game 5 than any other Cavs players had in NBA playoff history, okay? Like, the 50.1 was massive. But it wasn't just that. It was what happened down the stretch. They were 5-for-21, him and Darius, in the first half of that game. You go through an 8-minute stretch of the third quarter, you can't hit a single shot. And then the final 13 possessions up until the final minute of the game were all Donovan Mitchell ended. And I was a little critical of that. Like, if I know the play is ending with Donovan Mitchell, that's normally not a bad thing. But when it happens 13 straight times when you need baskets, we might be doing this a little backwards. I thought in many ways he was trying to put the world on his shoulders, and not enough people were calling him out after the game for that because we were just so respectful of the idea that he was playing hurt and he was playing injured, Spencer.
Yeah, I think I know when we talked about this last week, like I gave credence to the idea that the Cavs had lost their identity and Donovan felt like it was on him to get them to the finish line, at least of that series, and just try to extend the thing as long as they could. Cause I think he realized that he didn't have the support he needed, whether that was injury related because Darius was just not himself at all because of the toe injury. Evan, I think, was playing really well in that game, but I think he just disappeared down the stretch because, like you said, Donovan was trying to do a little bit too much. I think it is fair to put some criticism at the feet of Donovan Mitchell and say, you were trying to do too much. You're part of the reason why this identity that you guys had all year, where you shared the ball, you passed it around, why you were so successful, why it disappeared was because you were trying to do too much. I also just think like the nature of the series kind of necessitated that. So, listen, I walk away from this entire thing, and I think, I'm not going to say Donovan is beyond reproach, like that he can't be criticized at all, but I also walk away believing, like, to me, he's as close to untouchable as you can get in this town just because of, and it goes beyond just like what he did in that series. Playing through the injury, the thing that everybody was asking all the other injured players to do, he did it, and he didn't complain about it. He even said after the series was over, like, I didn't want people to find out about my calf. Like, I didn't want people to even know because I didn't want it to be an excuse. Like, he didn't make any excuses. He tried to put the team on his back. He did the thing everybody asks for him, for a player of his caliber, to do in that moment. It just didn't happen. The Pacers were just the better team, and they got you out of whack. But to me, like, he is like the perfect star for this town. Just everything he said,
and he wants
everything
to win.
He's done.
You can see how badly he wants to win. Like, and listen,
and that's why I can't blame him for that either. Like, him trying to put the team on his back was like, that was him showing you, I will do anything to win.
It's not going to be me just bashing Donovan for 40 minutes because I don't want to do that. I like Donovan. I respect what Donovan did. I also feel like a lot of us are putting the B- test score up on the fridge and saying, congratulations, you really nailed it. Like, no, it's a B-. We don't put those up on the fridge, okay? That's where A-pluses belong. Like, you lost in five games. You didn't win a single home game. I can appreciate all he did, but what made them so great in the regular season was Donovan taking a step back. And then we got to the second round of the postseason, and you call it whatever you want, picking up the slack, whatever you want to say, but ultimately Donovan didn't trust his teammates enough in that stretch in the third quarter, and then especially late in the fourth quarter, whether it was gone for right reasons or not, he didn't have that belief in them, and he completely reverted away from what was successful in the regular season by really doing what he did in Utah in the playoffs and just taking over games or attempting to take over games, and the end result is the end result, and that was a 5-game loss.
Yeah, and I listen, he has to atone for that ultimately, because I think this is also part of like why I say he's the perfect star for this town, is because if you brought this up to him, he would be the first person to tell you.
And he was.
That he hasn't done it enough.
I like that you bring that up. Right. He was. He was the first person to kind of put it all back on himself. Now, he did do it in an interesting way, because you were there at those press conferences, you heard.
Yeah.
He did do it in an interesting way, where he kind of tried to absolve himself of the blame while kind of pointing out the other people that maybe hadn't necessarily done it without saying their name.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that. I can see what you're saying. But like, I think Donovan's body of work in terms of like how he addresses certain situations, how he addresses his teammates, speaks for itself. And the fact that he like he did the thing, JP, that we want stars to do. Like all the years when LeBron was here, and it was always like, we need more help. And I like he always put it at somebody else's feet. He never put it on himself. Sometimes he may be like, yeah, I shouldn't have made this play or I shouldn't have made that play. But generally, LeBron was always ready to say, we just don't have enough. Donovan has never done that. He has always said, I know I'm going to be judged by what I do in the playoffs. I know a lot of this is on me. I have to be better, this, that, and the third. Like, I respect the fact that he's willing to do that. And I think that is part of the reason why I'm not maybe as critical as some others are of what he did in this series. But I also think, again, there was context for why it kind of played out that way. So I don't know. I you are right in that this series went awry, and it was largely because he was doing too much. But I also walk away from this, and I just look at, to me, the things that stand out about this team, there are bigger warts than anything that Donovan Mitchell did in the series that make me feel like we have to address those before we start directing all of our attention back at Donovan Mitchell and saying like, well, now you just can't do this or it's all your fault.
No question. But it does beg something that Jason Lloyd wrote in his article today. And you can see that on The Athletic. He goes, we have 8 years and two franchises of proof. The answer is the second round, debating how long and how far he can actually take you in the postseason. And maybe, just maybe, as great of a player as he is, maybe the reason why he never makes it past the second round and hasn't in 8 years, when you look across the NBA and you see all these other guards that are doing it right now, look at the four teams remaining in the NBA playoffs. That's all teams led by guards. That's it. It's Tyrese Halliburton. It's Jalen Brunson. On the other side of it, you got two guards there in SGA, and then obviously you have Anthony Edwards. Like, it's a guard-driven playoffs right now, and the guy you have isn't making it past the second round and hasn't in 8 years. So Dwayne Wade spoke on this. Dwayne Wade, obviously, former Cav and NBA Hall of Famer and everything else. I like that I said former Cav. I needed to, for some reason, I needed to put that in there.
I love doing that, by the way, when there's like a player who spent like all Shaq, of a second here, and you're Cav. Like, former Cavs legend. I always say legend with it, too.
Had
always.
To. Timeout with Dwayne Wade talked about Donovan and his lack of postseason success.
He's been to the playoff every year. Obviously, he's an all-star. He's one of the best in our game. But you're judged
by wins and losses.
Mm-hmm. Playoffs. You're judged by the playoffs.
Yeah.
Donovan's at a different level now.
Yep.
He's judged by what he does in the playoffs. What he does in the regular season, that's what he do. He's been doing it since he came into the league. Now this is where he's judged. Everything has to go right, but he has to find a way, because he wants to be in that conversation with the greats. He has to find a way.
And I think that's where I find this conversation fascinating. It's almost, in a way, disrespectful to Donovan the way that we treat him. We stick up for Donovan in a way that he's not asking us to, but we stick up for him in a way as if he's not a great. Like, Dwayne Wade right there is like, he wants to be a great. Then you have to expect great things in the postseason. If we thought Donovan Mitchell was a top five player in the NBA, we would treat him entirely different than what I think a lot of people think about him right now. I think because people believe he's somewhere between top, 10 to 20, maybe 15 to 20, we're like, well, geez, you really just did your best out there, didn't you? The game called for you to try to take over because everyone else was injured and didn't have it, so you were able to step up and try to do it that way. If anything, you make an argument, it's disrespectful to Donovan the way that we treat him, because we don't treat him like the superstar that he wants to be treated like.
Can I just say, like, I think Dwayne Wade, like, again, and I'm giving credence to the idea that when Donovan says, I know I'm going to be judged based off what I do in the playoffs, like, he recognizes that, and that's what Dwayne Wade is alluding to here. And that is the fact, that is the truth of any sport, NBA especially, like, the stars are judged by what they do this time of year. That's just the nature of the beast. You got to kind of live with it. And Donovan said that exact thing. He was like, we are blessed to play this game. We know this is if this is the result, like, you're going to get criticized for it. So I 100% think that's true. But I also think that Wade's comments are almost speaking to like a bygone era of the NBA, where it's like, it's on, because this was LeBron's career. Everything, LeBron's entire career, it was, he's not doing enough in the playoffs. It's on him, it's on him, it's on him. And then all of a sudden,
but think about how right that feels in a LeBron conversation, and then how wrong it feels in a Donovan Mitchell conversation.
Well, and to be fair, like, I had the
because
same
one is an all-time great and one isn't.
I had the same argument, though, back then that I have now, which is like, he can't do it all alone. And I think that the NBA has evolved to a point like, you bring up the guards that are doing it right now, look at their teams. The Thunder are one of the deepest teams in the NBA.
They all got guys around them.
The Minnesota is one of the deepest teams in the NBA. The Knicks are a very deep team.
Halliburton's got Siakam. Brunson's got Cat.
The team you lost to, the Pacers, they are extremely deep. And their players like all raised to their game to the next level in the playoffs. That's why you got guys like Nembhard making a bunch of three. Like, he goes from like a 33%, 34% three-point shooter to like a 40% three-point shooter in the playoffs. It's absurd. So like this is the nature of the NBA today. So as much as I understand which way it's coming from, I think that's like a past take of like, it's on the star to take their team. Because we just saw Donovan try to do that, and he couldn't. He couldn't do that. So I just think, like, yes, he's going to be judged based off of that. But we also have to keep in mind, like, the context of the situation and realize that it's going to take a village to get over this hump and get Donovan to that level.
Donovan be that guy where he does take the step back like he did in the regular season? And they talked about this. Jared talked about this. Jared Greenberg on the broadcast. The idea that Donovan in Utah, he was like, I want to avoid what that was. Remember game one?
Yeah.
It's like, I want to avoid what that was. Where in Utah, he felt like he was taking over the games and he was doing too much. And then we watched five games later, and it was exactly what he did in Utah. It was the same exact thing. Like, no part of that looked different to me. It was if anything, you make an argument, it was even worse than what he did in Utah.
I think that's, like, listen, it's a very fair criticism, as I've already said. Like, He clearly, in this series, they lost sight of like what made them great. And he lost sight of what made them great. I think he's plenty capable of taking that back seat. I think circumstances changed in this one, and he kind of took it to a different level that he didn't necessarily want to. And maybe this is where, as I bring up LeBron, and I bring up LeBron sort of making excuses, I know people hated that, but maybe this is where, as Dwayne Wade questions, like, it's up to Donovan to get over that hump. Maybe this is where he needs a little more LeBron in it. Maybe this is where he needs to stop standing up and saying, you know, our roster's good, we're fine. Maybe he does need to force the issue.
Poking holes a little bit. Maybe, be like, this is where I failed, and I failed because of this.
And you know what? This is maybe
where that's what I thought he was getting after, by the way, in one of his press conferences to end the season.
Maybe this is where I'm at with it. Is like, I don't need to sit here and be like, he did too much. Like, it's his fault they lost that series. Like, I'm not criticizing him for that. But maybe where I'm going to start criticizing him in terms of getting over that hump is like, I think he can be that guy. But I also think, like, maybe he needs to force the issue more. Jason talked in the piece about how he is obsessed at this point in his career with winning and getting a championship.
We've talked to Jason here.
And getting deeper in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Okay, so sometimes that takes the difficult thing. Sometimes that's why LeBron was never afraid to do it, because he knew he was obsessed with, I'm chasing this ghost of Jordan, is always what he called it. Maybe that's the part of Donovan not getting over the hump that's missing. Not necessarily what he's doing on the floor, or trusting that he can get get his team kind of playing to a higher level.
All right, 216-474-0092. How far can a Donovan lead team take you? And is any criticism of Donovan at this point actually fair? Dwayne Wade, very harsh. Jason in his piece says, we have 8 years and two franchises of proof. The answer is the second round when asking how far he can go. What do you think? 216-474-0092, afternoon drive right here on the Fan. Yeah, he says, we have 8 years and two franchises of proof. The answer is the second round. And listen, I feel good about Donovan leading this team. I think a lot of this is baked around the idea that Mobley, though, will eventually be the star. And I think when we talk about Dwayne Wade, we talk about some of these conversations, I think it's entirely, I'm going to say, unfair of Dwayne Wade and again, it might be disrespectful to Donovan to think this way, to make it seem like he is one of the all-time greats, because he's just not an all-time great. And I think the Cavs fans have an understanding of that. And I think that's why there's a lot of flack that is, or a lot of leeway that's given by Cavs fans to Donovan.
I also think, like, along the lines of what I was alluding to, just how the NBA's changed, and it's not about, like, you need the star player that's going to always do everything in crunch time, like, and how you need a deeper team. I think it's kind of rich that Dwayne Wade, of all people, is like out here calling him out when he was part of one of the greatest super teams of our generation. Like, that was literally a concession by LeBron that he didn't have enough where he formerly was playing. So let's team up with two of the other best players in the league and build this super team. And like, now we can finally get over the hump.
He still won in 06 prior to that.
So he did win on, Shaq. Shaq was still a really good player at that time. Then he came here, and that was where he was at the, you know, in the limelight of his career.
If you were to give him an actual, like, truth serum test, I bet he would say he loves that title more than any of the ones with LeBron.
Probably.
Because it speaks to what he said.
It was more about him.
Why he was able to join LeBron and do that is because he'd gotten over the hump on a team that was perceived to be his, and he'd accomplish that. And so like, there's not many people in this world that can really throw the dagger at Donovan the way that Dwayne Wade did. But Dwayne Wade is one of those people.
I would agree. Like, he has the qualifications to do it. I just think it's funny that, like, we know how close he is with LeBron. He knows that LeBron dealt with those demons of, like, he's going to be judged in the playoffs and all those things.
He used to be close with Donovan, too, though. That's the weird part.
It took LeBron teaming up with the person being critical of Donovan Mitchell to literally get over that hump and win a championship. So, but that's why I say maybe that's the thing that's missing from Donovan Mitchell in terms of getting over that hump. Maybe it's not the performance on the court, because I think we can all look at that series. And even though your argument is valid of, yeah, he probably did too much in a season where that wasn't how the Cavs were winning.
Right.
They were winning a different way. He probably did too much. But you still saw him drop almost 50 in a game they should have won. Like, that would have gone down as one of the most iconic postseason performances ever, certainly in Cavaliers history, if they had pulled that off. And we would have been like talking about how great Donovan is.
I know, but sometimes I feel like I'm taking crazy pills when we have a conversation about Donovan in this postseason. I know he was individually great. You didn't win a single home game in a round that you were favored by. You were minus 500 in Vegas, okay? You didn't win a single home game, and you lost in five games to the bleeping Pacers. Like, can we put it in some perspective? People are acting, I love Donovan, I do, but people are acting like Donovan dragged this team to the finals and should be talked about as such. The usage rate was out of this world. He was doing way, way too much. And I get why he felt like he needed to, but then also within that, and listen, I'm not saying anything that's harsher than what Donovan has said about it himself.
Yeah.
You want to come at me for it? Want to come at me for it? Come at Donovan. He made much harsher claims than I'm making right now.
He opened the door for all the criticism. So it's a totally fair point by you. My larger point on like the performance on the court is like, we've seen him do it. We even saw him do it in Utah in the bubble, right? Like, we've seen him from an individual standpoint, like, deliver in those moments. That's not the question with Donovan anymore. It's like, how are you going to get past the second round? And can you get past the second round?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the thing I'm now falling back on is I just don't think he has, like, I hate to say it this way, because like I think Donovan is who he is, and I think the fact that he is kind of this humble individual is great. But maybe he doesn't have that LeBron element where he's like, I'm going to demand that we make changes. I'm going to demand, because if he wants to win as bad as Jason Lloyd said he does, that might be what it takes. That might be what it takes for him to get over that hump. Is like, we need to change something with this team. As much as he loves those guys, as much as he flat out told you in that press conference, I would die for the guys in that locker room, and he basically tried to do that during the series.
So I believe he
needs to get over that hump. Maybe the thing he needs to do is get a little more of that LeBron in.
I believe he had his hand in the JB Bickerstaff change.
That's fair.
And so I do think he is making more moves behind the scenes than maybe we recognize, but you are right. You're right in the idea that we have not seen him when it comes to players and people that he believes are his buddies. We haven't seen him say, I got to do what's best for the basketball team. And maybe this is where he is more involved this offseason. Like, I'd be dying to know. And you were there for Altman's entire press conference. Did anybody ask him in any sort of way of like, hey, what does Donovan think about this? It's such a player-led league that I feel like I feel like Kobe and the Cavs have not really opened their doors to those discussions yet. And maybe they have, and I'm just not aware of it. But I've gotten no reports of the such. But in most organizations, like we bring up LeBron for a reason. Like the big dog has a seat at the table. And it doesn't feel like Donovan necessarily does. Even though I do give him credit, I do think he was behind JB Bickerstaff being gone.
I think that's very true that he had a hand in that. Maybe that is the start of him sort of wielding a bigger stick. I don't know, but like, we bring up LeBron because it's the easy example because we saw that firsthand. But like, there's other, like, think about Giannis in Milwaukee right now. Like, they made a lot of decisions they brought in Damian Lillard. They made some changes at the trade deadline because they were trying different parts and pieces around Giannis to keep him happy. Like, those guys have a lot of these other stars in this league have all gotten to a point where they, I don't want to say they just start demanding things, but like, they put the pressure on the organization to help necessitate the team to that next level and not just bank on, well, hey, development's the thing that's going to get us over the hump. And I get that Donovan's bought into that idea, and that's great, because in a place like Cleveland, you normally wouldn't keep a star player like this if you hadn't sold them on that idea. But maybe the thing that's missing is like him being willing to hold the organization's feet to the fire and press things a little bit more on like, hey, we got to make some changes because I want to win more than anything. And I'm not just going to sit here and wait for another year to hope that development is the thing that gets us over the top.
216-474-0092. Was it unfair by Dwayne Wade to basically say that he's judged by what he does in the playoffs and that's it? And how far can a Donovan-led team take you? Michael in a car batting leadoff today. What's up, Michael?
I think that not only was Dwayne Wade, so was Kendrick Perkins, and so were an awful lot of other national media, because it's not like Donovan Mitchell didn't try to have somebody else on the team help him, but Darius Garland couldn't stand on that foot one-legged. Ty Jerome couldn't hit the ocean from a boat. Sam Merrill's first three-pointer never went in. And every time he passed the ball to either Dean Wade or Isaac Okoro for a wide-open shot, they passed off. So I'm saying that this wasn't the fact that Donovan Mitchell tried to do too much too soon. And I'm not even going near the fact that every time he drove the lane, he ended up on the floor and not at the foul line. For them to say, well, you know, he's not one of the greatest, because take a look what happened to the Cavs in the second round. Problem with the Cavaliers was we got injured at the wrong time. Because if any of this would have happened during the season, the team would have A, experienced it, B, been coached through it, and C, had an answer for it. That locker room was too young to have that much go wrong at the same time and still play like it didn't matter. That's all that happened to the Cavaliers this time. And Donovan Mitchell couldn't have played any better. He plays the way he did, exactly the way he did. And the players I mentioned didn't come up with an absolute zero and were in the playoffs tonight against New York.
All right. Thank you, Michael. I feel like a lot of Cavs fans, they feel that very same way, is that like it was everything else but Donovan. But I do think even in that last game, he went to the free throw line 21 times. The Pacers went 22. Like his best play at the end of the game was to run into somebody and get a foul. What you watched SGA do last night, that's what Donovan did in the second half of that game. That's not a, I have any sort of belief in anyone around me, or I myself think I'm making the right basketball play. It's just, I'm just trying to put points on the board.
I definitely think game five was his most egregious game of that series, by the way, to your point, because that was the one game where he actually had somebody helping him out. Like, Evan was having a really good game, and then all of a sudden he disappeared.
Even Ty Jerome yeah. came up, hit two big three-pointers.
Well, I blame Kenny for that, because
he didn't play the first half at all.
You put Darius Garland back in, and it was like, he's giving you nothing. At least Ty's finally hitting some shots. Like, leave him out.
And then they went away from him after hitting two big three-pointers.
Yeah.
It's tough. And I know it's tough, but Donovan is, and he knows this as well, he's not going to be able to skirt this. You now have the Joel Embiid syndrome, okay? You've never made it to the conference finals. People are very aware of it.
But he's nicer, so he gets away with it.
Well, I mean, Embiid does stink. Let's just be honest about it. You always think like, I'd love to have a dinner with that person. I'd love to have a dinner with Donovan. I think it'd be great. No part of me wants a dinner with Joel Embiid. You know what he would do? I feel like he would just reach over and be like, you done with that steak yet? I'd be like, no, it's great steak. One of my favorites of all time. And he would just grab it and be like, it's my steak now. That's Joel Embiid. And that's why people don't like him. And that's why we bring it up with him. But Donovan's taking a lot of flack right now nationally. There's no question about it. We'll get back into this Cavs conversation just a little bit later on. 3:00, we got a Browns conversation with Shedeur Sanders. Coming up next, Quick Hits right here on Afternoon Drive.
From the latest news and rumors around the sports world,
go Angels!
To the sound bites you need to hear.
Hurry.
It's Quick Hits.
All right, starting us off here, Spencer, the Bills, a team that you used to cover.
Yes.
Team that you know very well.
Yes.
They've been tabbed for Hard Knocks. And there's a lot of excitement. I like Josh Allen a ton. I used to be like anti Josh Allen a lot. I used to be very, mainly because I just thought he was overrated, but I've come back on the other side of that now. It took a very long time to get there. Now we're there, and I feel like he's properly rated. It just took us a little bit. And I still don't think it's enough to get me to watch Hard Knocks.
So I'm actually intrigued by this one because it's like, I guess I won't say one of the first times, but it is one of the first times it feels like you're getting a team that has a chance to actually be like really, really good on Hard Knocks in the preseason training camp edition. I don't know. I think there's going to be some fun stories there.
Fired at Hugh Jackson.
You know, there's going to be a lot. Well, it's always like the Browns were in rebuild at that time. Like they won one game.
We just drafted Baker at that
point.
That's
true. There was that. I don't know. I just think.
But yes, you were right. I'm not saying you're wrong. It's just funny to me.
Yeah. There's going to be one episode that's just dedicated to like Josh Allen's relationship with Haley Steinfeld the entire time. Like,
sure, if they want to actually get ratings back, it should be more than one episode.
Yeah,
they should do a whole episode about him being this like awesome golfer now, and then they should do a whole episode and a half about him dating Haley, and then like it really should just not be called Hard Knocks with the Buffalo Bills.
Hard Knocks with Josh Allen.
Hard Knocks with Josh Allen.
Hard Knocks Josh Allen's life. The only thing that's missing is like it would have been better if Stephon Diggs was still there because he's a personality. That's what you want for Hard Knocks, and he's no longer there. I don't know off the top of my head, like, what other, I mean, their left tackle, Deion Dawkins, is kind of a character, but, like, you're really going to focus on the left tackle of the team is, like, a big story? Probably not. Like, come on. What are we doing?
Is Jordan Poyer still there, or am I just making things up in my head now?
Was he there? No, he was with the Dolphins last year. No,
oh, you're right. You're right, because he's a
but
character.
But that is, well, yeah, and he's
former
got,
Brown. And a character.
Yeah.
Gregory Rousseau, he's a character. They got some guys. Maybe let him cook with James Cook. We got some players.
Let him cook with
maybe
James
that we
Cook.
Could like a whole segment. It's just James Cook cooking. What do you like to cook, James Cook? And then they just go through.
They got to get Brandon Bean on the radio for a couple episodes, just ripping into the radio host for talking about needing more wide receivers.
That could happen too. I'm open to a lot of suggestions here. If I ran Hard Knocks, that's what we would turn into. It's James Cook being Bobby Flay or being Emeril. Bam!
It's a great idea. Honestly, it's a great idea. We're gonna stick with. Sorry, I always forget about the imaging. We're going to stick with the NFL and Hard Knocks because off of that, we also found out that the NFL is doing an in-season edition like last year with another division. This year, they're honed in on the NFC East, so we know the teams in that division. It's a star-studded group, of course. But, JP, I would attest that they should have just let this version of the in-season edition just die where it did
last
year.
Like a one-and-done.
It was terrible. Did you watch it at all last year? Did you watch it because it was like, I need it from content purposes?
So I watched episode one because I thought we were going to do a lot on the content side of things within it, right?
Yeah.
And so I watched episode one, and then Nick and I really didn't talk about it much after the day that it happened. And so then I was like, I guess Nick isn't into talking about this. And so I was like, I guess there's no need to watch episode two. And so then I just caught the clips. I caught the clips after that, and it was no, you know, the sad
that
part
was a
though.
Smart way to do it.
Well, and so I got my wife got all excited to watch it too, and you know, there's some things that she'll watch with me. Like we watched the Brett Favre documentary. We can talk about that in a second if you want. And she was excited for that. She's like, oh, I get to learn all about the shadiness of Brett Favre. Like she was all, because she didn't know anything about it. She didn't know anything about Jen Sterger.
Oh,
she didn't know
any
of it. And she's like, wow, that was fat. And I'm filling in the different parts. Like they completely bypassed what a drunk he was when he was in Atlanta. And that's how he ended up like going from Atlanta to Green Bay. They just swept that under the rug. And I'm like, no. In a documentary that's about how shady and how maybe problematic Brett Favre is, to sweep that under the rug, interesting move. But we watched Hard Knocks episode one with the four divisions last year. And by like 20 minutes in, my wife was like, no, this stinks.
My feeling was just like, because you were covering four teams in like 7 to 8 episodes, there was just no good stories told. One of the funniest stories was like Joe Burrow talking about buying a Batmobile. Like it was like, it was just such stupid stuff. You didn't really, the beauty of the training camp one is that they have it's all just around one team and like these individuals that you might not know about, and they can really vet these stories and like get you to buy into the people. I wasn't bought into Myles Garrett being one episode where he was talking about how much he loved basketball and how integrated he is in the Cleveland community, and then one episode later being like, yeah, I might not be here next year. Yeah. I live that. Like it was, you just had such surface level stories. It was just terrible. I don't know why anybody who's like, oh, I'm so excited to hear more about the Cowboys and the Eagles. Like, no, you're not going to get anything from this. There's going to be no stories told that are really that anything other than you already know about these teams.
I remember at one point thinking, huh, Tomlin eats Doritos. And it's like, that shouldn't be my big takeaway. Yeah, it shouldn't be the reality. It's kind of wild.
Silly.
All right, we did have NBA last night. Thunder win game one. How big of a problem are SGA's foul calls? The man is a foul merchant. And the entirety of that game, and then even into the later parts of the fourth quarter, it was wild how he was just getting every call under the sun. And the people that were angry about it was even funnier, but it definitely distorted the game.
How many years has he been in the league now?
Four?
Because he feels like the first superstar that's like getting calls this early in his career. Like I think back to like so many other guys that were like, oh, this guy's going to be great. And it took years for these people to get calls. SGA is getting calls year four in the league. It's incredible. Good for him.
He's been in there longer it's been longer than four. He's basically been in our stratosphere and relevant for about five, but it's been year six, year seven.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he, I guess, is at a point where he probably earns them. But like,
I mean, he's going to win the MVP tonight, and this will be his 100%. Third straight top five MVP finish. So like he is superstar level. So yeah. If anybody's getting a call, he's getting a call. But the amount of it was very LeBron-esque, and I don't mean it as a slight when I say it with LeBron, but I think I mean it as a slight when I say it with SGA. Like, you are foul hunting in that point, and their defense is so good that I honestly don't even think it's a bad plan. It just makes for not great basketball, in my opinion.
Yeah, he very much looks like Donovan Mitchell in that Pacers series.
Exactly right.
Like, yeah, hunting fouls because he knows he could do other things because he's not hurt like Donovan was. But, like, yeah, that's the strategy. It makes for ugly basketball. You are 100% right about that. Nobody really wants to see that, especially at this stage of the playoffs.
No, and their defense is so good. And you're reminded last night about why they had the best defense in the NBA and one of the best defenses we've seen in the NBA in decades. But, like, if the Timberwolves are only going to score 88, maybe that is just the plan that SGA has to have. Let's go to the free throw line and let's try to win it that way. But it just was not enjoyable to watch. Omaha!
So, JP, the Ohio State Board of Trustees is rewarding LeBron James with an honorary doctorate of public service degree. I have a hot take for you.
Yeah?
I think honorary degrees are a slap in the face to people who actually went to these schools and earned a
degree. You worked at an institution at one point. My mom teaches. She teaches at a university. She has a PhD. And so she's... I got to ask her thoughts on this. Because I'm giving you my... I'm giving you my I respect universities take is what I'm giving you, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I agree with you on this. I have not considered it often, but I have anytime anyone tries to make some sort of claim that they have a degree as an honorary degree, looked at it as that's not a real degree.
It's not a real degree. Like I said, it's a slap in the face to these people who paid money, went to these schools, spent 4 years at the schools to earn this degree, and then LeBron James just gets to jump the line because, well, he did a lot of good in the community and he gives a lot of money to the Ohio State football team.
Is LeBron like, doing? Why, is he doing? Is he doing a commencement speech on top of this or anything like that?
I mean, maybe they're giving him something, but like, can't you find another way to reward him? Like, hey, let's create an award in Ohio and like give it to him. Why does it have to be an honorary degree? Like, people work hard and pay good money for these degrees. LeBron doesn't just get to jump the line because he's rich and he gives back to the community. Like, I think it's great that he gives back to the community. That doesn't just make you beholden to get an honorary degree.
It sounds like that's exactly what makes him beholden.
No, it's ridiculous. It's silly.
It might be silly, but it sounds like Ohio State wants to attach itself to LeBron.
They do.
As often as they can. And if they feel like this is the way that they can do it, and LeBron will feel like an actual graduate, I think it's a smart play.
I am not pushing back on the notion that it isn't smart to attach yourself to that cash cow. I'm just saying it is, honestly, it makes universities look bad.
Like, now, if there was,
like, hey, come to this school and earn your degree, and then you're like, or you can just go get rich and then be a fan of this team, and then we'll give you an honorary degree later. Like, I'm not saying everybody can do that, but I'm just saying.
If there was ever an athlete that I would bet on when they're done playing, if not for this honorary degree, maybe he doesn't need to now, that would have just gone back to college because he didn't do college the first go around, it would have been LeBron.
I could see that. I could 100% see that.
Right? Like, and taking business classes, you know, or something at like Harvard just to do it. Kevin Love did that one summer, and then he went around wearing Harvard sweatshirts.
We talk about him cutting the line, though. His classes would have been like he was a football player at Ohio State, where like you just take the most basic classes and like you don't actually show up, and then the person just gives you a grade anyway. Like, he wouldn't have actually done much. But yeah, I could see him 100% doing that.
Omaha! Let's stay in the college ranks for a second. The NCAA is going to hire a CEO. After the House versus NCAA settlement came out, and what's going to happen here is the four conferences that rule NCAA right now are all going to get together and they're going to anoint a CEO. Many people are speculating it could be Nick Saban. They feel like is the right call for this. We can go down that road, but can hiring an NCAA CEO change college football for the better? An actual governing body, but a person that will make rule changes that will be in favor of making the sport just better.
I think it can work, but I also think that is going to be like what I think follows a CEO for college football is a super league. Like, I think ultimately that is the path you go down is like, okay, we have this person who's now like ruling on everything college football. And now we're going to branch off into like this NFL light where we have two major conferences, certain teams get invited, certain teams don't. And we just kind of go from there. And the benefits for those teams are different than the teams in the lower levels. You might have like MAC schools having to go down to like whatever it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it feels like is next from this. I mean, listen, I'm open to trying something like this because frankly, the NCAA at this point has no teeth. Like they can't really do anything. I was surprised that Michigan had like a self-imposed ban for themselves or whatever they did, punishment for the cheating scandal. Cause it's like, can the NCAA really enforce these things at this point? I think if you had somebody in like a position of power with college football where all the schools kind of signed on the dotted line and said like, we agreed to this, then you actually give power to somebody to rule over the sport. And I think it could work.
And that is Quick Hits. All right, we come on back. 216-474-0092. Shador spoke with Kay Adams, spoke glowingly on Flacco. But is there any way that this quarterback room actually gets along together? We'll get to your phone calls, we'll get to your tweets, Twitter reactions. Brought to you by our friends over there at Chapman Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. It's Afternoon Drive right here on The Fan.